As you can see from the screen, this morning's lesson is entitled, Young People Need Religion Too. It is something of a companion to another sermon I've been preached, titled similarly, but which says, Religion is for Husbands and Fathers Too. These titles suggest that these two segments of our society especially need to recognize that religion, and I should say that when I speak of religion in this sermon, I'm speaking, of course, of biblical religion, the true religion. These two segments of our society especially need to be reminded that biblical religion has something to offer to them that they not only need but must have. But we would then ask the question, why is it that young people, as opposed to some other segment of society, especially need to be reminded that religion is for them too, that they cannot afford to ignore it? Young people may need to be reminded of their religious obligations because, just like the husbands and the fathers that I mentioned a moment ago, they may face a special set of impediments or obstacles to their fulfillment of their religious obligations, their obligations to God. Husbands and fathers need to be reminded of that because sometimes men get so caught up in providing for their families that they think perhaps that that's the only thing that deserves their attention. Their job or their income-earning ability is all that demands their attention. And they push God and their responsibility as leaders of spiritual leaders of their family to the background. Young people also have or face that same kind of situation. Youth is a time when people are especially vulnerable to worldly distractions which lure them away from God. A young person conceives of his whole life as being out there in front of him. Death seems to be so distant that they don't even think about it. It's not even on the horizon of their thinking. So young people begin to think that they're invulnerable, that death is something that happens to other people and not to them. Do you ever think about death that much? I have to say that as I get older, I probably think about it more often than I used to think about it. But anyway, as a result of this feeling of invulnerability, this disconnectedness from death or even aging, young people are inclined perhaps to take risks and engage in foolish behavior, perhaps that adults would not be so inclined to undertake. And so the demands of religion are something that they don't sense that they need to concern themselves with. Why? Because religion is for people maybe who are on death's door. And a young person would say, well, I'm far from death's door, so why should I be concerned about those things? And furthermore, young people do not have the experience to help them prioritize the competing demands of life. They've not seen enough of life to know how quickly it can pass and how unpredictable, how very uncertain life can be. Now, with older people, they've got this set of past experiences, this history that they can draw upon, and they can say, oh, I remember doing that one time and that hurt. I'm not going to do that again. But young people don't have that bank of experiences to draw upon to discourage them from doing what is hurtful so that they can even know what is hurtful. Older people, they're able to negotiate life based upon their past experiences. But young people, by definition, don't have that bank of experiences. For young people, everything is new. Everything is interesting and appealing to them because they don't know the bad or dark side of some things that they can do. They haven't experienced that. Adults have. They know to avoid those things. But to the young person, Everything can be appealing because, as I said, they might not have experienced the dark side of a particular kind of activity. And so, curiosity drives young people to experimentation. Other people, older people, they've gotten through that experimental stage. They've experienced this or that. They've experimented with this or that. They know that it's bad. They know that they should back away from it. But curiosity drives young people to dangerous experimentation sometimes. And thus, this tendency to explore the world, to engage in all aspects of the world without restraint and see what the world has to offer them, pushes thoughts and obligations toward God into the background. Even the Scriptures recognize the special tendency toward this worldliness in young people. Let's look at several of these passages. For instance, Job 13, verse 26 reminds us of this very fact that young people especially have to contend with this desire to experiment with the things of the world. Job 13, verse 26. "For thou dost write bitter things against me, and dost make me inherit the iniquities of youth." Here's Job speaking. He remembers the iniquities of youth. Now, that's not to say that older people can't commit sin too. We know that that's not true at all. But he speaks of the iniquities of youth as though this is a special time in life when iniquity especially can find a person vulnerable to the appeals of Satan. Older people, I imagine, can look back upon their lives and they can think of some things that just the very memory of will cause them to blush with embarrassment. At least I find that to be the case in my own life. I can think about some of the things that I did in my youth, and I'm immediately embarrassed that I ever did those things. And I say to myself, how could I have ever done those things? I don't want to do them again. Psalm 25, verse 7 is also a passage that we could look at along these lines. Psalm 25, verse 7. And there it says, "Do not remember the sins of my youth, or my transgressions. According to thy loving kindness, remember thou me. For thy goodness sake, O God." So again, same situation. He remembers the sins of his youth. Let's push ahead here to Proverbs 22, verse 15. And notice another reminder there of what life for the young person can hold. "Foolishness," it says, "is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him." But foolishness is bound up. It's tied up almost inextricably so that it's hard to remove it and get it out of there. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. 2 Timothy 2, verse 22 refers to youthful lust. "Flee from youthful lust," Paul admonishes Timothy, as though there are lusts that are, well, usual to young people, if not unique and peculiar to them. And finally, along these lines, we see that Solomon issues a special and long admonition to young people. "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth." Remember now thy Creator, not later. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. And it is typically thought that this long description that sounds kind of weird that he goes into is a description of aging. For instance, let me get over to Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter, and look at it specifically with you. He says in verse 2, for instance, "Before the sun, the light, the moon, and the dark, and the stars are darkened, and the clouds return over the rain." It's a dark, dreary time. Old age can be like that. And it says, in verse 4, and the doors on the street are shut, as the sound of the grinding mill is low. And it is thought sometimes that that might refer to someone who has lost his teeth and his ability to chew and grind his food. And that is characteristic of old age too. So in various ways, old age is described here. I recognize a pretty gloomy picture. But the point is that if you want to keep your later years from being so much like that, if you want your later years to be a more pleasant, enjoyable time, you need to remember your Creator even in the days of your youth. Don't wait till you get to that point to remember Him. It's just like people who will put aside some of their income and save it into some sort of retirement account, or put it in what might be called a nest egg commonly, in anticipation of reaching a certain point in their lives when they'll no longer be able to work or want to work, and they'll be able to retire and fall back and rely upon that money that they have saved up. What if they hadn't saved up that money? What will their later years be like then? Well, they may find themselves having to continue to work even into their latter years, because they did not have the foresight to anticipate that they would not have that ability to work, or would not derive enjoyment out of working in their later years. And so they didn't put aside and save that money. They didn't prepare for their later years. It's the same way with respect to spiritual preparations for one's later years. Our spiritual lives are going to be so much more enjoyable if we have remembered our Creator in the days of our youth. Well, specifically now, let's consider why. Just why do young people need religion? As I said, I believe, toward the beginning of this lesson, some people, young people specifically, may have the idea that death is so far out there, the issues that religion, faith in God, are intended to address are so far out there I can hardly even see them on the horizon of my life. So therefore, they're so far out there I don't need to tend to them now. I don't need to address them or consider them now. I can look at them later. Is that wise thinking? No. We need to ask ourselves why young people need religion. And I think when we do, we can arrive at some answers that impress us with the fact that indeed religion, biblical, godly religion, is for young people too, not just for older people. First of all, let's observe this. The young die too. That's a shocking statement to some people, I'm sure. You realize that? Oh, we may realize intellectually that young people die too. Every once in a while we open up the paper and we read that that young person has been involved in some accident. But the young die too. Death is not something just for older people. Now, of course, this is not true, that death is just something for older people. As a matter of fact, young people may face the health threats that older people may not have to face. Because older people, as I said a while ago, have a bank of experiences to draw upon and inform them that this is not something that they want to do, at least not anymore. But young people, because of the nature of youth, because of the way they look at life, and they don't think of death or even injury as something that will happen to them necessarily, they see life in a different way. They don't see the threats out there. What they see is opportunities. And as a result, young people may face a special set of threats. For instance, let me just give you some examples. Young people may be inclined to get into certain occupations that older people don't get into or have gotten away from, and those occupations have special hazards attached to them. For instance, have you noticed that it is young people who go off to war, and if they die in war, it is young people who die? Why? Because it's the young people who are the soldiers. They get into the occupation of soldiering. And as a result of getting into that occupation, and they're allowed to be in their that occupation because they are young and their bodies can take what is demanded of soldiers, they place themselves in harm's way. And so their lives come to an end. Now, I've used the example of being in the military. But there are other types of occupations that are physically demanding and may even put young people in a greater position of harm being done to them. And as a result, some even die. So in some ways, you could even say that young people face additional threats to their lives that older people may not face. I mean, listen, if you've got, for instance, a 50 to 60-year-old man and he's still working, where is he going? What kind of work is he going to be doing? Is he going to be out there like some electrician climbing telephone poles and working with the wires and so forth where he might be electrocuted? No, he's probably going to be, at his age, with his promotions, he's probably going to be behind a desk, which would be relatively more safe. But not only occupational hazards, but there are recreational hazards that especially face young people. Young people do things that put them in harm's way because it's fun. For instance, a young person might be out there on some sort of watercraft, and he's doing all sorts of crazy things by way of having fun, but those crazy things put him in danger of harming himself or even killing himself. And some do kill themselves. Young people, for instance, might get out on the ski slopes and they'll do things that, somebody my age couldn't do or wouldn't want to do because it might be too physically demanding, but they find it fun. And as a result, they might wind up breaking a leg or even killing themselves. So young people, because they're young, they can do things and they want to do things that can be physically threatening to them. And then, of course, there are the sins that, because of foolishness, young people get into. And as a result, they suffer the repercussions of those sins and that foolishness. So I'm trying to say that just because a person is young doesn't mean that he isn't going to have to face the prospect of death. Young people die too. And as a matter of fact, because these people are young, sometimes they're, we might put it this way, chances of being killed may even increase. But secondly, young people need the guidance which biblical religion offers. Indeed, it could be argued that because young people do not have the natural wisdom which the experiences of life offer, that they're even more dependent upon the guidance of biblical religion. Some issues of life are so important that they should be learned by study of God's Word or from the example of others rather than by experience, because experience can be a very hard, even unforgiving teacher. Yes, experience can be a very good teacher, but it can also be a very hard teacher. In fact, by the time someone learns the truth by experience, it may be too late. So young people need the faith to follow the guidance of God's Word before they find out by personal experience, perhaps when it is too late, that the Word of God was right after all. Also, young people need purpose in life. And they need need biblical religion that can give them that purpose in life. Purpose in life is very important. Because it gives us direction. It forces us to discipline ourselves. If a person has a purpose or what we might call a goal, an objective that he's working toward, then that objective that he has in mind, we might call it a dream, is going to control his behavior. Right now in Beijing, China, the Olympics are in process. And those Olympians, those athletes who have made it to the Olympic Games, have had to face great challenges in order to reach that point. They've had to challenge themselves. They've had to work every day of their lives for years, training, you would think almost constantly, working hard to develop their abilities to the point that they could qualify for the Olympic teams of their respective countries. And having gotten to that point, don't you know they're going to put forth their best effort in order to get the gold medal, if at all possible? They're going to work hard at it. That dream that they've had, that objective, that goal, that purpose in their lives of going to the Olympics has forced them to hone and refine their behavior. Anything that did not contribute toward their getting to the Olympics and competing effectively and well there was cut out of their lives. Was there a certain food that might, if not make them fat, at least detract from their physical abilities? Then get rid of it. Was there some relationship in their lives that was going to distract them and make them perform less well? Then get rid of it. Put it on the back burner. Save it for later. That's what I mean when I say having a purpose in our lives is going to control our lives and force us to discipline ourselves. Now, I've been talking about the Olympics as an example, but anything. For instance, young people might have the idea in mind that they want to get a certain degree in college so that they can prepare themselves to undertake a certain type of job. Might require a lot of work, a lot of study, that is, to achieve that. And what do they do? Well, they may have to cut out certain other considerations from their lives for a while. Some people, to use a classic example, might even put off marriage for a while in order to get to that point. I remember back in 2003, 2004, when our daughter Devin got engaged. It was expressed from my wife and me that we wanted our daughter to finish up her college education, get that out of the way, make sure she's done with